Welcome to the Action for Happiness podcast. I'm your host, Guy, and this week we speak with Mark Williamson, who dives into the background behind the Action for Happiness charity and his journey on becoming its director.
So I got this real urge at that stage now, more than 10 years ago now, to do something more useful and meaningful. And that led me down a path towards another passion of mine, climate change and sustainability. But all the time, feel that there was this hunger for this question of what really matters. Mm. Happiness matters, and that we can live in a way that contributes to a better world.
Yeah. Action for Happiness is a movement of people committed to building a happier and more caring society. Visit actionforhappiness.org for more details.
All right, well, thank you very much for coming down to the,
it's a pleasure.
To the studios.
I'm just so excited about what you got here. It's fantastic.
Well, you know, one of the inspirations for Anne and I is, you know, we talk about it often when we see you up on stage, you know, when you introduce guests at the talks, it's like, well, you know, Mark always brings it every time. You know, there's a skill of like presenting in front of people, you know, how do you hold attention and at the same time that professionalism, I guess. So, and a lot of that comes from your corporate background, right?
Well, it sort of does and it doesn't. I mean, I do have a corporate background, and I guess some of my ability to present comes from that. But actually, I was a terrible presenter.
Really?
When I was in corporate life. In the content was fine, but there was no passion.
Yeah.
It was really dry. If I look at videos of myself now doing previous jobs, it's just so desperately dull. And I think the difference isn't because I've become particularly great at it, it's because what I do now is something I believe in.
Yeah.
And people say to me, it really comes across mm-hmm. how passionate you are. And I think that's the difference. When you're talking about something you care about, mm-hmm. the humanity comes out, the warmth, the enthusiasm. So I think that's the thing that, you know, I now feel really proud of, in that when yeah. I stand up on the stage, these are the people I respect, these are the audience that turn up to these Action for Happiness events. You know, they're brilliant people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a real privilege to do that, actually.
What was the journey? What was your path that led you to be Director of Action for Happiness? As you mentioned, you know, there's, you know, it completely changed who you are, and I think it's a really inspirational story. So why don't we begin there?
Oh, thank you. Well, I think in some ways my story isn't particularly remarkable, but I think it's quite helpful potentially because it reflects a challenge loads of us face about what does really matter. And in fact, this has become a theme for almost everything we do with Action for Happiness: what really matters and what are our priorities and how do we choose to live wisely. And I think for a large part of my life and my career, I was very blessed and fortunate, but wasn't living very wisely. And in fact, wasn't really tuned into who I am and what matters to me, and indeed what I can do that contributes. So by background, I was a sort of scientist engineer kind of guy. I mean, I was relatively academic generally, but got into science and engineering and did a degree in electronics and then ended up doing a PhD. And sort of the first awakening was in that world of science, which I loved,
yeah.
realizing that I was a people person. I was motivated mm-hmm. to be with people, and sitting in a lab doing research wasn't really me, it left me feeling low energy. So I was like, okay, I need to go into a people-focused job. So I went to be a consultant, management consultant,
right.
Which kind of used a bit of my technology knowledge, but then rapidly became commercial and all about teams and challenges and mm-hmm. strategy and so on. And I'll be really honest, I was partly motivated there by a desire for financial, it wasn't to be rich, but it was for stability. There was a real sense of like, actually, I could earn some money doing this mm-hmm. thing that maybe I couldn't earn as an engineer scientist. And although that wasn't a super high priority for me, like, I have to be honest that like there was something in this about, you know, a materialistic ethos, actually, which I feel very differently about now, but was definitely there yeah. and kind of culturally conditioned that actually in my peer group, it was like, you know, earn lots of money because then you can whatever.
It's the message we're told from a young age.
It yeah. isn't actually the message I was told in my family. I'm very blessed to come from a quite grounded family background. My mum's a passionate Christian and school teacher. My dad's is an engineer and scientist. But again, the sense in our house was never money matters. Mm. And yet somehow at a sort of early 20s age, I was, you know, like, I want to get a job that sorts me out financially. And I got up that ladder and I...
In IT?
Yeah, sort of IT related, but it became more about the strategy that goes with that and the project management and all yep. the complexity. But yeah, it had a technology component to it. And I I was chasing and chasing up a ladder. This is the metaphor I ended up using years later, which was I'd been conditioned partly by family desire for me to, quote, succeed, but also the kind of peer pressure to have more responsibility, earn more money, be more successful, be seen as being good at something. So I was charging up this ladder, but I never really stopped to see what the ladder was leaning against. You know, so I was getting better and better paid, getting more and more responsibility, actually getting more and more stressed and more sense of emptiness, actually. Mm. So this idea of, you know, being, quote, successful, but inside feeling the opposite. Mm. And it turned out, you know, that actually a lot of muscle pain is caused by tension, which is caused by stress, not by physical problems so much. And it's really shocking. So when I read about this, I thought this sounds like nonsense. Yeah. But this book that Kate gave me helped me learn what I now know to be called mindfulness, actually. At the time, it was like a breathing exercise. But it was stopping, tuning into how you're feeling, breathing, calming. And I kid you not, I went from being, I'm in pain constantly, sometimes I can't get out of bed, sort of level of agony, I've stopped doing any sport, to being running again, playing sport, you know, living a pretty normal life again within about 2 or 3 weeks. It was literally like, well, how does that work? That's crazy. And it flipped my head because the rational scientist in me said that doesn't make any sense. But basically it was the beginning of a, hang on a second, what goes on in here, you know, has massive effects on everything, our relationships, but also our physical functioning. So I went off to do an MBA thinking I'm going to go into some other field of business. But on a business degree, you get to look at all the different sectors. And I just found this really strong sense of whether we're looking at how to make aircraft, how to sell toothpaste, how to, you know, what fast moving consumer goods, all these different sectors. The overarching sense I got was like, I'm not motivated by any of that. I don't want to sell people stuff they don't really need. And the whole of business largely seems to be about selling people stuff that isn't really meaningful. So I got this real urge at that stage now, more than 10 years ago now, to do something more useful and meaningful. And that led me down a path towards another passion of mine, climate change and sustainability. Spent a while working in that area. But all the time feel that there was this hunger for this question of what really matters. Mm. And I discovered Richard Layard's book. So many people will know Richard Layard is the co-founder of Action for Happiness, a very eminent economist, wrote this book, Happiness Lessons from a New Science, that totally changed my life when I read it. Mm-hmm. And basically says, you know, the story we have about progress, what really makes for a good society and a good life, you know, about more and more wealth, more and more sort of material progress. It's just a broken story. Mm. And so he looks at it from a societal basis, but I found this myself. Like when I let go of the chasing the material and the financial and said, you know, how can I live a happier life? Mm. And I spent more time with friends and started a family and changed my career. And suddenly it was like a sense of, wow, this is better. I'm less stressed. I feel more purposeful. Mm. I think there's something in this link between personal and societal. So when we personally shift to focus on what really matters to us, you know, something quite profound happens. But as a nation, as a kind of culture, we need this more generally, that when we stop chasing GDP growth or obsessing about, you know, being the best and the cleverest and the fastest and, you know, and generating the most stuff, then again, as a society, we kind of tune back into what matters. And I said, this is where my great shift comes from. But I think it's also where Action for Happiness comes from, this question of what matters. Mm-hmm. And I was encouraged to change my priorities. I've been spending so much time thinking about the money and the stuff and the success and what other people think. Mm-hmm. And when I shifted to like, actually, this is what I find motivates me. When I spend more time pursuing things I care about with people I love, doing things I'm passionate about.
So when I try and explain Action for Happiness to some of my friends and family, you know, I do get that feeling that as soon as I mention it, people kind of already understand what I'm talking about. And it's, oh yeah, that. So can you give me some examples of, you know, what is Action for Happiness actually doing? You know, if I were to go then explain to my friends, what is the mission and, you know, what is being done in order to achieve that?
Mm. It's a great question. I mean, the fundamental idea of Action for Happiness is incredibly simple, but quite profound when acted on. And it's basically that an individual, anyone, could join a movement, join a group of people that have this shared conviction that happiness matters and that we can live in a way that contributes to a better world.
Yeah.
So the Action for Happiness pledge is, I will try to create more happiness and less unhappiness in the world around me. You know, again, very simple, but huge implications if you act on it. Mm-hmm. And people do act on it in different ways, and I can give you some examples. Well, from a personal perspective, this can apply in how I am as a parent or how I am as a partner, as a friend, in my community, at my workplace, and so on. I mean, the way we sort of collectively as a movement or through our own work within the small team at the middle of this, but I always like to say that this isn't really about the team. Anyone who knows the Action of Happiness team knows how small and resource constrained we are. And the power doesn't lie in the few people in London doing work. It lies in the thousands who are hopefully inspired to do something differently. But the sorts of practical examples of action that's being taken. So there are, at the big picture level, people like Richard Layard, Anthony Seldon, the sort of co-founders of Action for Happiness, and others who are politically and socially motivated, who are trying to push for change in things like policy. So how do we get a school system that, you know, isn't just measuring grades, but also measures children's well-being? How do we get a health service that isn't just focused on physical illness? Mm-hmm. It's about not just, well, also caring about mental health, but actually doing it in a preventative way, not just about picking at the pieces when people have fallen off the cliff of serious depression and anxiety and so on. How do we create an economic policy that isn't just about growth at all costs, that actually says, unemployment or avoiding unemployment turns out to be way more important for our well-being than whether or not the economy is grown by X percent each year. Yeah. You know, we know that when people lose their jobs, it's not just about the money, it's a sense of identity. So there's all kinds of big picture things like that. And we're involved in some of those conversations. We run, for example, a series of dinners with quite influential decision makers in health and education, and try and start conversations about what can change. So that's one thing, but, you know, only obviously involves a small portion of our supporters who have kind of connections in that area. Then you move into something like the school system. We have now a fabulous toolkit that some supporters of ours developed that can be used in primary schools. We have an increasing range of teachers that really care about these ideas and are trying to act on them in schools. But again, only really relevant to those who are in education, really important. We have done quite a lot of work in workplaces, from major corporates, even, you know, sort of investment banks and law firms, down through public sector bodies, through to small, tiny charities. And I never really expected that would be part of our work with Action for Happiness. And it is for two reasons. One is there's just been a big demand for it. Almost without us looking for it, people come to us and say, we've got unhappy workplace, can you help us? You know, or we may have engaged employees, or but actually people are not motivated, they're not happy, there's something about our culture, can you help? So we've run workplaces and events and training and workshops and other things. And the other reason we do that is that provides some income to support our charitable work, because running these kind of things, even with a tiny team, it's really hard to raise funds. The conventional charitable funders don't get this in the way that you might imagine they would. So to be able to generate your own source of sort of financial stability is helpful. So that's another thing that's been happening. So actually, it's been really great to see business leaders saying, I don't just want to improve the bottom line, I want to help create a more connected, happier, more trusting workplace. We've seen parents wanting to use materials with their kids. We've seen people who run voluntary community organizations saying, how can I use, for example, the 10 keys to happier living? How can I take that into the community groups that I run? How can I use that in my organization? And of course, there's that 10 keys to happier living book and framework that are used all around the world now, actually, and being translated and used in different cultures.
I was actually in Dubai and I saw that on the shelf.
Really?
In a Virgin bookstore.
That's brilliant. I mean, I love how this... the next example I was going to give was with our local groups, and how the small group, and in particular Stan Rosenthal, who's founded our Brighton group that's now grown to become a huge group in Brighton, was where the first Happy Cafe came about. And so another example of someone saying, I can do something locally, let's take a cafe and make it more than just a place where you buy a drink. It's got a sense of community, and it promotes the idea behind the movement. The reason you just made me think of it was talking about, you know, going abroad and seeing it. Richard Layard was, he had a phone call from a friend who was in, where were they? Malaysia or somewhere. And this friend said, I've just walked into this town and there's an Action for Happiness cafe that's just like, I've just bought my drink from, and they've got like your materials. And you know, Richard didn't even know this was there, but you know, it's the other side of the world and someone's doing this. But the most important answer to your original question, which is what are people doing, is the individual volunteers that are stepping forward to make something happen locally.
Yeah.
The most important thing we found with the whole of this Action for Happiness movement is that even though books are great and events are great and online communities are great, you know, you can help people and affect people and inspire people through those things. Mm-hmm. The most life-changing thing we found is when you get people together face-to-face to have what we now call conversations that matter, ideally in small groups near where they live or work, that is the thing that can really change lives. It's also the thing we've let go of most in modern culture. You know, we've got the Facebook generation, we've got the digitization, we've got the isolation.
Mobile phones.
So many things that undermine our connectedness. And when you get back to this idea of talking together face to face, then that's what changes lives. So what's been
it's where
so
the magic
exciting,
happens, I believe you once
said. Yeah, I mean, there is no magic solution.
But I like that term,
there's a human magic, I think. There's a sort of sense of like, it's almost, I sometimes think of it as, well, the feeling I got when I first ran one of these courses, we have this 8-week course, and when I've been on them, is a feeling like it's a bit like being in a soap opera where it's real, you're in it, and it's not trivial, it's real important stuff. You know, it's a sort of sense of purposeful, very emotionally engaging sort of real life drama. But it's not through the lens of group therapy or kind of, you know, bearing your soul. But what we do in these core sessions is people talk about what matters to them, what makes for their relationships good, what helps them find meaning at work, what helps them cope when they're struggling, but in a room of people who trust each other and have, you know, got a friendly environment. And it's not, you know, it's not like going on a course where you're taught all the answers. The whole spirit of it is like, let's work out the answer together. People consistently write to us when they've been in one of the courses and say, that's changed my life. You know, and I know you and Anne ran one of these courses in London. So, I mean, we're so grateful to you and so many other volunteers who've done this, because, you know, people give their time to do this on a free basis. And I think they, I mean, I'd love to hear your experiences, but people say to us they find it really rewarding to do that. But, you know, I cannot tell you how many people write to us and say, I went on one of these courses and it's really shifted my life. You know, I've healed my relationship. I feel more purposeful. I've changed my job. I'm coping better with stress. You know, I lost my mum recently, and I'm finding ways to cope with it. Really moving stuff. So, you know.
And I think it's important for our listeners to know that, you know, if you go to the Action for Happiness website, which speaks all about the course, but there's actually a, you know, you can either choose to facilitate it or attend one.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, because Anne and I facilitated it, so we're not trying to teach anyone anything, but it's, you know, we help, you know, because the course material and the videos and everything is there, but, you know, just provide that space in which the conversations can be had. And
That's exactly the right way to think about it. This is not when people step forward, they're not stepping forward to be a teacher or an expert.
Sure, yeah.
As you said, it's about starting a conversation.
Yeah, providing that space, facilitating that space.
Yeah. We've just to connect. And sometimes we find that when people want to run the course and they are experts, you know, they've done a positive psychology master's or they are a trained, you know, expert in some related field, that in some ways that almost might become a barrier, because they then feel a responsibility to sort of impart knowledge. And actually the lovely thing is when someone steps forward as a well-meaning volunteer, they say at the beginning of this course, I'm not here to tell you the answers, I'm here because I care about this and I want to give my time, but we are all human beings and we're going to go on this journey together. And,
that's the beauty of how it was set up.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the intention behind how we created it. And I've just been so touched and moved and overwhelmed, actually, by seeing the people who've come forward to do this. I genuinely worried that many people who stepped forward to run the course would either have the wrong motivation or they would just be inappropriate. And something about the way we've articulated what this is all about. And I think the fact that it does take a bit of work and effort to do it. I mean, you know, you'll know the amount of preparation that went into finding the right venue, thinking about how to structure it and so on. But almost without exception, the people who've put themselves forward have just been wonderful people. And this is the key now, I think, to this movement, that in fact it isn't really about, it's not about the organisation at the centre, or indeed about all the millions of people we'd love to reach. I think the most powerful element is these brilliant volunteers who say, I want to take action to help make this world a better place. Partly because I know that will make me happier, but also because I genuinely care. And I think these people are fantastic.
You're listening to the Action for Happiness podcast. I'm your host, Guy, and on today's episode, we speak with Mark Williamson, director of the incredible Action for Happiness charity.
There was an amazing crowdfunder. I can't remember what the financial amount that you tried to hit, but you guys hit it.
We did, yeah.
We
raised £100,000 on
the Kickstarter platform.
It was on crowdfunder.
But, you know, just the fact that there was such a great response to that in Chief. So since that took place, and now that there's been so many courses that have been carried out, I guess, what are the lessons that have been, you know, what's the feedback from that? You know, has there been updating the course material? Perhaps you can share some of the learning lessons.
Yeah, well, I think the most important learning, first of all, is that this face-to-face gathering is really, really powerful. Because of the feedback we get, and also I'll say a moment a bit about some of the analysis we've now done of the before and after impact. Mm-hmm. But I think this is the big challenge we face in modern society, that one of the most important things for our well-being, getting together face-to-face with other people and talking about the stuff that matters, is under threat. Yeah. You know, actually, as we've let go of religion to some extent in modern society, we've let go of opportunities to connect in our communities. Mm-hmm. As we've moved to, you know, automated checkouts and buying online and staring at screens and, you know, doing online stuff, which brings amazing time-saving benefits and other things, we have walked away from many of these face-to-face opportunities. Mm-hmm. So now we're not solving all of those problems, but I think this is one example of getting people together locally, face-to-face. And so people say to us, for example, why haven't you got an online version of the course? Mm-hmm. And we may well introduce a slightly different online thing in future. But actually, the reason we don't do that is that there's this human connection. When you're in a room with someone, it's different to when you're on Snapchat or retweeting them or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I think that's the number one lesson is face-to-face human connection is so important. The next learning, I think, is one that we're really proud of, which is about the potential impact of this. And we now have hundreds and hundreds of pairs of data of that people have filled in a survey before they start the course, even really know what it is, and then after they've been on the course, which could be 2-3 months later. And we look at two things. We look at, one, their own well-being, and two, perhaps even more importantly, their sort of outlook or their pro-social nature. And we see some really quite substantial increases in their own well-being. So their life satisfaction, their mental well-being scores, they go up really substantially. To the point that, so I should caveat this by saying that this particular data we've got, where we've got sort of 800 pairs of data, that was not done in a full randomized control trial with a control group and so on. But the scale of change that we see is like more than 1 point on the 10-point scale of life satisfaction. That is bigger than the data would show that you see, for example, when someone gets married, you see a big increase in their well-being, or when someone's in a positive relationship. But the course seems to have a bigger impact than that. And when someone becomes unemployed, they get a big negative jump in their well-being. Or when someone loses a loved one, like a spouse, big negative fall in well-being. In all cases, the change in well-being we see ongoing in the course seems to be bigger than these major life events, like you know, losing a job, losing a loved one, or you know, going into a loving relationship. So now there's a big question, like, does that last? But I mean, the scale of effect here is really quite substantial from something that's, you know, a relatively small intervention. But even more excitingly, what we find is that people become kinder and more trusting. And of course, our great passion with Action Happiness isn't just to make individuals feel better themselves, it's to say, how do we shift culture? So people come out of the course with data that shows that they are more compassionate towards others. They're more likely to sort of stop and help someone in need or be proactively, you know, kind. And they're also more likely to be trusting of others. And this is the other big passion of mine, and indeed of Richard Layard and so many others, which is that we've broken trust in modern society. And, you know, when you mentioned the negativity in the media earlier and the sort of sense of the world all going, you know, awry, it isn't really true that things are all getting worse. It's just the pervading sense we get. And Steven Pinker's Better Angels of Our Nature is this wonderful piece of work that sort of shows that actually, although there's been various blips over time, humanity has been getting progressively less violent, longer living, more generous.
He mentions now is the safest period we've ever.
I mean, it's incredible, actually, when you look at the really big picture. And yet we don't see that. And one of the things about the media narrative and the current culture is that we think people are bad. People other than the ones I know directly can't be trusted, are out to get me, and just isn't really true. But it erodes trust. And when trust gets eroded, we then act in more self-centered, less mm-hmm. compassionate ways. Yep. So the fact that we see, again, a greater than 1 point on this 10-point scale increase in social trust when people come out of the course, because there's a sense of like looking around and going, actually, I want to reach out and help others. I'm motivated to make a difference. Mm. I think restoring trust could be one of the most important challenges mm-hmm. for modern culture. Yeah. So we're making our own small contribution there. So that's another thing I think we've learned. And for those who are scientists among the listeners, we are also now doing a proper randomized control trial study of the course, which will look at this in with a slightly more scientific rigor. And it even includes measuring biomarkers, mm-hmm. where you take saliva samples from people and you look at their levels of cortisol mm-hmm. to see how stressed they are. You look at levels of various, what they call inflammatory and anti-inflammatory markers that mm-hmm. sort of give a sense of the stress response and the immunity response and sort of physical health functioning. So it's like, does this stuff actually change our physiology? Now, we don't know the answer to that yet, but I think it's conceivable that when we're happier, when we're more trusting, we're also sort of physically better. But I think your question about what have we learned is perhaps even more interesting when you think about what have we learned about, you know, building a movement and sort of, you know, how mm-hmm. this can spread.
Yeah.
And one of the things we're learning is it's really hard to do this in mm-hmm. not in terms of helping volunteers make change happen or in fact changing lives. It's about making something go from a small idea to a bigger idea.
Yeah.
You know, we've got these passionate volunteers, we've got the Dalai Lama as a patron, which is quite an attention grabbing thing. Mm-hmm. We've got now a proven course, we've got, you know, so much in principle support from the
funding as well.
A bit of funding. These courses generate some of their own support because we ask people to make donations. Mm. And in general, on a course-by-course basis, the donations are greater than the cost of the venue and the refreshments. And yet still, going from a few hundred courses with a few thousand attendees to what you really need, which is thousands of courses with millions of attendees, that jump is really hard. I mean, every business and every startup knows this, that scaling up is tricky.
Yes.
But our big challenge now is, how do we reach the masses? Why is it that when we go and talk to people, they don't really know about this? They don't really know about the course. They don't know about actual happiness.
Mm-hmm.
What you know, the challenge I think we all face in wanting to change the world is just cutting through the noise of so much stuff, you know, that's just trivial nonsense.
Yeah.
That, you know, how can we help people tap into this stuff that really is life-changing?
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know the answers to that, but we're working on different ways of different theories of behavior change, of mm-hmm. communication, of, you know, engaging people. So if you've got any great answers on the spreading the word, then, you know, the podcast helps. You know, podcast helps.
Well, I truly believe the podcast is a great way to spread the message, you know. And just as you know, your passions combine, the passion of great conversation, you know, speaking amongst friends, and at the same time, you know, using that as a platform to share ideas, you know, that's really what's driving us.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for all you do. And, you know, it's the little things that can together mm-hmm. do make this big difference. I really honestly believe that when you look at all the little ripples of enthusiasm, creativity, generosity that members of this movement have already shared and acted on in the last few years, you know, whatever legacy this thing leaves is thanks to those people and that kind of compound ripple effect.
Yeah.
And I do believe that stuff makes a difference. In fact, actually, it's that, you know, we sometimes look for the big picture. We must change the system. And in fact, actually, just the way we treat each other has this really big impact. The little act of generosity, friendship, kindness
mm-hmm.
that then inspires others to do the same. And I think that's how culture changes.
But, you know, what I really love about the Action for Happiness group, and I think we could possibly end on this, is that, you know, if you look at the history of guests that you've had on, you know, like Richard Burnett and Claire Kelly, you know, talking about mindfulness in schools. Then you look at Lord Layard and his work in government.
Yeah.
Then you got in the health system, and you got in so many different areas. It's basically, you know, tackling it from all angles. And that's really kind of where, if you want to make the shift in, you know, in the general perception of it and that movement for good, I think, you know, you guys are absolutely hitting it on the head, and, you know, you leading the be the change that you want to see kind of movement. It's really incredible.
Well, thank you for that. And I'm really glad you mentioned mindfulness, because I haven't really said that word since I, at the start of this talk, talked about my own experience of learning sort of some awareness techniques that then transformed my physical health.
Yeah.
And actually, I sort of, that worked, in some ways, that was what woke me up to the importance of this whole agenda around happiness and well-being. Mm-hmm. And I see mindfulness as such a powerful life skill and enabler for change. And I think there's a, I mean, it's lovely to see the whole global takeoff of the mindfulness movement. And, you know, we've had John Kabat-Zinn and Dan Goleman and Matthew Ricard and Ed Halliwell, all these, you know, amazing range of different perspectives on mindfulness. And I know it's had a huge impact on your own life as well, and Anne's life. And one of the things I think is misunderstood about mindfulness, well, lots of things are misunderstood. One of the classics is that this is about somehow clearing your mind and, you know, sort of living a kind of, you know, in tranquility. Yeah. And of course it isn't. It's about tuning into what's really going on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's waking up, not sort of shutting down. Mm-hmm. But the other sort of criticism in terms of changing the world that mindfulness gets is like, oh, well, how can you possibly achieve anything when it's about sitting there doing nothing?
Yeah.
You know, just how can sitting still and breathing ever have a positive ripple effect? But I passionately believe, and I think many, many people in the Action for Happiness movement do this and practice this. This idea that it's when you're mindful that you're able to make wise decisions and live wisely. When you can get out of the chatter of your own mind and cut through the bombardment of stuff we get from modern culture and just say, this is what's going on and I have a choice. Mm-hmm. I have a choice about how to live and how to act.
Yeah.
But that opens up the possibility not only to be happier, but also to sort of treat others more kindly, to make a wiser choice as a teacher, as a business leader, as a friend, as a parent. And I actually think this is the most powerful asset we have and the most sort of misunderstood opportunity in modern life, this idea of awareness and choice. You know, I think so many of us are in this feeling of pressured busyness, like society is like getting faster and faster and I've got to stay at my screen, I've got to do this and I'm always on.
Distractions, interruptions.
And I can't focus on anything for more than a few seconds, and if I sit still, I kind of like, oh God, I'm wasting my life. And so mindfulness is this ability to sort of say, well, what's really going on? Mm-hmm. And be aware and be awake and then to choose. So it isn't passive. It's not about sitting there and letting the world wash over you. It's saying, right, I can choose to be a force for good. I can choose to act on this anger or this sadness or this real emotion. And of course, with Action for Happiness, we're not trying to null out these negative emotions and saying, oh, it's all fine all the time. Mm-hmm. We're saying, no, actually, there are constructive ways to respond to loss and adversity and sadness and, you know, unhappiness and frustration. And, you know, mindfulness perhaps is the tool to help us turn those difficult situations and negative emotions into something constructive for ourselves and also for our loved ones and our communities and for social change.
Yeah.
And, you know, much as I'm frustrated by some of the lurch towards fear of the other we've seen in recent, you know, EU referendum votes in the UK and, you know, US politics and various trends around the world, you know, that sense of fear of the other is unhelpful. I also think there's all... the response to it from what you might call the informed or more moderate progressive classes sometimes is a little bit demoralizing as well, because it's very much like, oh my goodness, we're all, you know, the world's gone wrong. Mm-hmm. These people are more stupid. Or actually, no, this is an opportunity to wake up, you know, and what we need all of us to do right now is to wake up to what really matters and to live wisely and consciously. And I think that when we do that, we'll get out of this fear and we'll get more of this trust and we will create a happier world. And so thank you for your part in that. And I hope people listening, you know, feel part of that community, because this is nothing without the shared sense of purpose. And, you know, I mean, I spend my life on this, but it's not about an individual or even this brilliant team of people that help us, you know, in London and around the world. It's about this overall community of, you know, like-minded people, and I think we really can make something better.
And it's actionforhappiness.org. Our listeners can go there. You find out all the information about the courses, about the podcasts, about also there's the YouTube channel, which has, you know, a whole host of all the speakers that have come on to name Daniel Goleman, John Kabat-Zinn, Ruby Wax, the Dalai Lama, you know, a whole host of these amazing, amazing guests. And there's also a Twitter page, right, that they can go and show their support to.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, search for Action Happiness on Twitter. There's Action for Happiness on Facebook. Yeah. the website, as you say. Mm-hmm. You know, you search for Action for Happiness, mm-hmm. generally on any of the major platforms, and you'll find some content, and you'll find some, you know, great engagement and community and like-minded people. And again, one of the lovely things on social media is just seeing how, in a world where often in social media you see such vile sort of negativity and sort of aggression, that in our community, what I see generally is people who sort of want to help each other and inspire each other and connect. And I think that we often notice the problems in, for example, in social media and culture more generally. Mm-hmm. And I'm just always inspired to see how many people are out there with a different ethos, and with one that is supportive and constructive. And so yeah, get involved if you haven't already.
All right, Mark, thank you very much for coming down.
It's
and, you
a
know,
pleasure.
We've got to do this again in
yeah,
the
let's
near
do it
future.
Again. And, you know, what you've created with the podcast, what you've shown with your own commitment to this cause, and what you've done, this lovely space you've created here and the people you're now bringing here. So it's wonderful, and thank you.
All right, then. That's a wrap. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
And remember, if you'd like to help create a happier and kinder world, then please get involved with Action for Happiness. You can join thousands of others who are helping to spread a bit more happiness in their homes, workplaces, schools, and local communities. Find out more at actionforhappiness.org. Join the movement, be the change.